I'll be reading from Numbers 13. But the men who had gone up with him said, "We cannot attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak, come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them."
It's great to be back home. That was not working. I appreciate very much the guys filling in while I was gone. And obviously, y'all didn't know I was going to be back today. Because we got a great crowd today. You know, we got a lot of folks gone. Y'all thought you were getting another week of a good speaker. So sorry, I'm back. Next week, man, just a lot of things going on. Next Saturday, thank you, son. Next Saturday is our community day. So that's from 5 till 8 here, but it's open to everybody in the community, as you know, or hopefully you know, you may not know. We'll have barbecue meal. We'll have music. We'll have snow cones. We'll have horse rides. We'll have funnel cakes. We'll have carriage rides. Just lots of activity. We'll have bouncy houses and just a lot of things going on next Saturday from 5 until 8. Everybody in the community is welcome, not just Milton, but Auburn Town and Las Casas, Murfreesboro, Porterfield, and all points around Watertown, Statesville. Everybody's welcome to come. So plan on being here. Invite your friends. Put it out on social media that lots of things will be going on. So that starts at 5 o'clock. We'll need lots of help, so we'll need some folks here early. If you can kind of park away, we'll be parking some at in the square. So hopefully we'll have plenty of room and have a great group of people. But that will all be dependent on you inviting folks. So again, share it on social media and those things. 5 to 8. And then Sunday begins our vacation Bible school, Sunday through Wednesday. And so I want you to come and be a part of that starting next Sunday. So community day on Saturday, vacation Bible school Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. It'll be a busy week, but it'll be a great time. So just plan on spending next week here at Milton. And we look forward to we'll have classes for all ages. Wayne Cornwell will be speaking here in the adult class. And then we'll have classes from our youngest all the way through adults. So hope that you'll come and be a part of that. And that starts this Saturday. Hard to believe that it's here this quickly. And I'll be honest with you. It was warm while we were gone. Even in Alaska, it was 80 degrees plus. And they were all talking about how warm it was. It was clear. You could see the tops of the mountains. All the tour guides were saying, normally you don't get to see this. So the weather was beautiful. But zero humidity, or almost zero. Kate kept going, my hair's so straight, because there's no humidity. And then we come home. Boom. The heat's not so bad, but that humidity is, it's rough. And we're still getting over the three-hour time lag. That takes just a little bit of getting used to. And getting up and just walking out the door to bacon and sausage and eggs any way you want them, and grits and oatmeal, and you know, I had cherries this morning for breakfast. Thanks, baby. But we have just eaten a lot, but we had a great trip. It was good to be together. And we went to Eugene, Oregon, where a couple of folks from here have gone out, the Groens, who were in Murfreesboro, I think, for 7 years. They had been missionaries for North Boulevard for many, many years. They had been in Tanzania for 14 years, I think. And they're now, Calvin is preaching for the Church of Christ in Eugene. And then Jonathan Young, who has preached here, is working to start a campus church at the University of Oregon at Eugene, so we were able to go out and eat supper with the Gruens and had breakfast with Jonathan and his wife and another young man that are working on the campus. So it was great to see them and hopefully encourage them some and be encouraged. I was telling Sonny, if you don't know, if you want to meet Sonny, 7 o'clock at Just Love Coffee is Sonny's place. And so they want us to go to this unique place because Eugene is unique. It is known for being a little more wacky than Portland, if you can imagine. I mean, that's there. I mean, it's interesting. We just have to tell you, when we landed in Seattle and had to go get our rental car, we had to go several blocks out of the way because they were having a pride parade. And that was interesting to see all the folks with their rainbows and their pride. I'd never seen Star Wars stormtroopers with rainbow things on their hats there. That was interesting. But Eugene is kind of a little out there. But we had fun. They want us to go to this place called Off the Waffle, which was fine because it's kind of Oregonish. And I appreciated them wanting to take us to somewhere different than, you know, what you can get at home. And so we said, well, we'll meet at 7:30. We normally ate free in the hotel, or, you know, you paid for your breakfast in the hotel, and so we eat breakfast in the hotel, but they want us to go to this place, so that was fine. And they text back and said, well, we can either go somewhere else, or they don't open. This is a waffle place now, a breakfast place. They don't open till 8 o'clock. I said, they don't open till 8 o'clock? I don't know, but Sonny said maybe that's a great work environment, you know, if you don't even start eating breakfast till 8, but we enjoyed visiting with them, and the waffles were fine. They were good. But most of all, we enjoyed the visit. And it's always good to be back home. Go back a little bit different lesson today. We're not going to be in Acts, but going to have some participation a little bit today, and we're going to look at some things. But I want to talk about the spies who went out to spy out the land of Canaan, which is really a wilderness quite a bit today. But there's a lot of agriculture there in Israel. Israel exports a lot of agricultural products, pineapples, bananas, lots of figs. If you eat figs, a lot of those come from Israel. And we were there one of my visits to Israel, and our guide said, yeah, we don't eat many figs. He said, they're too high, we export them. It was like, you know, they're too expensive to eat, so we send them to you folks who will pay more money for them. But it has a lot of agriculture, but it's dependent on irrigation because there's not a lot of rainfall, but it grows a lot. And it was really interesting. I thought about this quite a bit because we were able to go into Northern California on our trip, and the Central Valley of California makes up 1% of the U.S. landmass, and it's a huge amount of the agricultural product that's produced out of the Central Valley. And they even have rice fields in the Central Valley, Ernie, which was odd. This place is dry and arid, but it's all done with irrigation, but they got rice fields that are irrigated. That's where all the almonds in the United States are grown. California is the only place in the United States that can grow almonds, but they got almond groves, walnut groves, olive groves, corn, soybeans, sunflowers, rice. They grow oranges. It's 263 different agricultural crops they grow there, but it's all dependent on irrigation. And so as, you know, things change climate-wise and those things, you know, areas that are very fertile need water, and if water patterns change, they actually go. And that's the difference we learned years ago, Carrie and I did, we still remember, the difference between a desert and a wilderness. Do you know the difference between a desert and a wilderness? A desert, even if you get water to it, doesn't grow anything. A wilderness is deprived of water, but if it gets water, it's productive. So there you go. You learn a little geography while you're here at Milton. You never know what you might learn. So that was obviously a wilderness because it wasn't growing a lot, but now with irrigation, it's extremely fertile and it grows a lot. So thinking about that, and then think about, you know, this land of Canaan, because often as we think about the spies and their report, you go, you know, when you're there now, it doesn't look all that productive, and then you realize how agriculturally productive it is compared to all of its neighbors. But in the visit, we got to go to the redwoods
into those things. And you remember, let's go back before we look at some pictures and talk about some things. What happens with the spies? Do you have those pictures ready, Mike? Good. You were looking like I didn't want to put you on the spot back there, buddy. Although I guess I put you on the spot, didn't I? Anyway, what is that? The spies. 12 spies are going into the land of Canaan, this land that God had promised Israel, right? They have left Egypt. Remember, they've been in Egyptian captivity for 400 years. They have left Egypt, and they're wandering across the Sahara Desert, which is a desert. Now, if you've driven across the western United States, you know, we got cactus and stuff like that. This desert is just sand dunes. It's just dune after dune. You don't see cactus. You don't see anything. You just see sand dune after sand dune after sand dune. And they're traveling through that because that's the barrier really between Egypt and this land of promise. But they're going into this land that's going to be fertile. And God has promised it to them. And what does Israel see before they leave Egypt? Again, it's going to be participatory today. What does Israel see before they leave Egypt? What happens before Israel leaves Egypt? The plagues. Now, what are the plagues for? They're not for the Egyptians. They're not to convince Pharaoh to let the people go. Although he does, after the 10th plague, he says, get out of here. And then he changes his mind. And how do we know that? Because here's what the Exodus account says. God hardened Pharaoh's heart. The plagues are to show God's power to Israel. All right? Because they've got to learn to trust God, right? Because when Moses goes, Israel has even really forgotten who God is, right? Because Moses says, who am I going to tell them that sent me? Remember that? And so these plagues are to show Israel the power of their God. And not only when they leave, what do the people do when they leave? They give them their jewelry, right? Their gold, their silver. I mean, the people are just giving them stuff to get out of here. Now, that's the power of God. I've had a lot of people tell me to get out, but they never gave me gold and silver to go, you know. Don't say nothing. Won't be nothing, Eddie. But, you know, to get out. And so all this is going on. So now they're wandering in the desert. And it's time to send these spies into the land of Canaan. All right, check out the land. Let us know about the land. Let us know about the cities, about the people. Are they strong? What's the land like? We want to know before we go into this land. So the 12 spies go. And what's the report that they send back? Do you remember? So that they're giants. The people are giants. Dan, come here. I told him.
Going to be a redwood.
No, you're not going to be a redwood. Dan is the water boy on the elementary football team. That's how big these old boys are. All right? That's what I want you to see. This is the water boy on the elementary football team. I mean, you know, you're looking, that's what the spies are seeing, right? Thank you, Dan. I won't make you stand here forever, but I give you an idea, right? They said the people are giant, the city, the fourth. They get a cluster of grapes and some pomegranates and some figs, and how do they carry them? On a rod between two of them. That's how they carry them. And they said, we can't go in there because what does it do? The land devours the people who are there because they're giants. They're descendants of Anak, and these people they really are giants. And two things. One, we look like grasshoppers to the people, but more importantly, what do they say? We felt like grasshoppers. We felt like grasshoppers. Now, what kind of land could that be? I want to show you some pictures. Because we got to go to the redwood forest. And so I thought, you know, because as I'm sitting there, this is what I'm thinking about. I go. So here's a picture. There's a clover. Now, that's a pretty big clover that fills your whole hand, isn't it? Is that Kate? Is that your hand or is that yours, Taylor? That's Kate's hand. Hold your hand up, Kate. Unlike Carl, she's got decent sized hands. So you go in this land, I give you a report. The clover is as big as your hand. All right? Look at that tree. What if I came back and said, there are trees so big that the 12 of us couldn't put our arms around the trees? You know, you begin, because when you kind of read that, you say, are they exaggerating? And then you go to a place like this, and you say, wow, this is intimidating. This is intimidating. Because there are trees, I mean, again, I don't know if we got the picture in here, we'll look at some more pictures, but, you know, the 12 spies could put their hands around it, and they couldn't touch hands. That's how big the trees are. That would be intimidating, would it not? Okay? Kate, you're the star. Their ferns are taller than we are. It's not that we can't get through the trees. The ferns are so tall we can't see through them. If you've not been to the Redwood Forest, those ferns, they're up here. It's amazing. It's not just the trees. And so when I share that, I said, man, if you took this report back, people could sure start feeling intimidated, right? Because it's pretty intimidating sitting there looking up those hills. And we didn't have a picture. You know, we went through one of the trees that you could drive through. We had to fold the mirrors in because we were in a rental expedition. I didn't want to buy that expedition. I did want to drive through the tree, but I wanted to be very careful. And we got back and they didn't charge us any extra, which is pretty good for me, buddy. We didn't damage it. But we drove through the tree. You know, it's pretty amazing to drive through a tree, isn't it? With an expedition. They're huge. Well, you can imagine the report that they brought back. But what had they seen? They'd seen the power of God. And that's really what I want us to talk about for just a moment today, is they had seen the power of God, but they let what was happening around them intimidate them, didn't they? Not only did the people look on them, but probably think their spirits were sad. I mean, the telling thing is when they said, we felt like grasshoppers, which is okay as long as you realize what? That God is bigger than that, right? Because it's not about Israel's ability to conquer the land. It's about what? God's ability, right? It's about God's ability. Now, well, not only had they seen the 10 plagues, they're in the desert and they don't have any water. And water is a tremendous thing, right? If you've ever been really thirsty, I mean, just to be able to get water. So they're out there, no water. And Moses prays to God. And he says, God, we need what? These people, and this is from the text, these people are ready to stone me. If you haven't read the Exodus from Moses' perspective, now you talk about a guy that had to deal with a bunch. I mean, every turn, they're undermining Moses, right? In fact, one time God says, Moses, it's not you they're rejecting, it's me. I mean, this was not a great trip for Moses. But he says, God, they're ready to stone me. And God says to Moses, go out into the wilderness, to this rock, take some of the elders of Israel with you, and take the rod that you have, and strike the rock. And he does, and what happens? What happens, young people? Water comes out. Now, when we talk about water coming out, do you remember about, and we don't know this for sure, but you know, a pretty common number of how many people left Egypt. Do you remember how many that was? Now, they had herds and flocks, so they had cattle and sheep and goats and donkeys. You know, so they had all of that stuff with them, plus people. Do you remember about how many? About 2 million. About 2 million. So when we talk about water coming out of the rock, we're talking about enough water for 2 million people and all of their livestock. That's a lot of water, isn't it? And hey, just the logistics of handling all that. That's huge. It's huge. But God provided them water in the middle of the desert. And so it's about learning to trust God. I'll tell you what else they had seen. Battling the Amalekites. And this is kind of one of the first times where we see Joshua. And you know, Joshua is going to become the leader over Israel. And he's going to be one of the 12 spies. Probably one of the two. If I told you, name three of the 12 spies, I bet there's a large number of you that could name two. That number that could name three drops off really quickly. And guess what? I'm in the name two, can't name three category. I mean, I could have cheated and, you know, picked out another name as I was studying for this lesson, but it's, you know, Joshua and Caleb we know. We don't know the ten who said that we couldn't take it. But Joshua is leading Israel in a battle against the Amalekites. This is prior to going into the land of Canaan. And do you remember that story? God says, I'm going to wipe out the Amalekites from the face of the earth. Their memory will be wiped out. But here's what happens. As long as Moses, he goes up on the hill with Aaron and Hur. And as long as he holds his staff up in the air, Israel wins. And the minute he drops his staff, the Amalekites begin to win in the battle. I can do this for a while. But it's going to get tiresome, isn't it? So young people, do y'all remember what happens? I need some help. Carson, can you help me? Come up here. Ryder, where are you? Come up here. Don't shake your head this way. Shake your head this way. Get up here. Get up here. Bill, you go help me? Bill will come. You missed your chance. All right. My arms are getting tired because this battle is going to go on all day. Do you think I can do this all day? No, I don't think I can either. So what did they do? They pulled up a rock for Moses. And so he sat down. And Hur stood on one side. Stand right there, buddy. Stand up. Stand up next to him. You're doing good. Stand up on your feet. There you go. That's it. And you be Aaron on my other side. And what are you going to do? There you go. Hold my arms. Don't, you don't have to hold my arm up. There you go. And so they would hold Moses' arms up. And that's how Israel wins the battle over Amalek, that he has those guys. Y'all doing a good job holding his arms up. You knew what happened, didn't you? Yeah, Carson immediately went to grab my arm. He knew what Aaron did. And they won the battle. And the reason I share that with you, thank you guys, good job. Good job, Bill, give me five. Or just go sit down one. Now they want to sit down. They never want to sit down. So, and God made sure, because all of Israel, when they're fighting this battle, don't realize that Moses is up there. Doesn't realize Moses is up there. But God said, make sure they know. Make sure Joshua knows what changed this battle. Because this was all about Israel learning to depend on whom? God. Learning to depend on God. And so now we send the spies into a land, maybe like the Redwoods. I don't know. But at least it intimidated them like that is intimidating. So different than anything else that we're used to. And the people were giants. Not all of them, but some of them were giants. And so Israel says, we just can't. And so two of the spies, the two we know, Joshua and Caleb, come back and say, we can take the land. But what do the other ten say? Uh-uh. They stir the people up. This is a suicide mission. We'll go in there, and not only will the people whip us, but if the people don't whip us, the land will whip us. I mean, that's really their message. We, you know, even if we were able to defeat the people, this land will eat us up. Because they had forgotten or were not trusting in God to deliver them. Because we know that 40 years later, what's going to happen? God's going to take them into the land, isn't he? And he's going to give it to them. And walls of the city just fall, right? The Jordan River parts. Because God is able to do that. And so even though they were intimidated, they should have learned to trust in God. What intimidates you today? What intimidates you? What stresses you? What do you worry about? What do you dread? What keeps you up at night? Is it obstacles in your own life? Probably for all of us, there's a mix of all these obstacles in our family. Certainly, I think the vast majority of us would be concerned culturally, if nothing else, at the changes going on around us. And those things worry us. And sometimes we can become hopeless. As Merle Haggard sang, are the good times really over for good? You know, I think sometimes we struggle with that. Are our best days behind us as a nation, as a people, maybe even as a church? Because there's, again, lots of pressures all around us, right? And things going on in our own lives, with our health, again, with our families, with our work. And those things are real to us, aren't they? You know what they say? If I'm having it, it's a surgery. If you're having it, it's a procedure. Again, those things that happen to us, and hey, some of these struggles are not just, they're not blown up. They are real hills. They are real mountains that we have to face in life, aren't there? I don't want to make light of that. It's not just imaginary. There are real obstacles in life that we have to deal with. But we should learn to be like Joshua and Caleb and not like the other ten, which was the majority. And the people followed them, right? Because I'm going to be honest with you. It's easier to discourage people than encourage them. Don't you find that to be true? You can discourage people pretty fast. You know, I can stand up and talk for a few minutes, put out some statistics, talk about some things going on. I can have everybody in here pretty down. We could get pretty much. It's a little harder to get us pumped up about things. But all of us have real things in our lives that we have to deal with. As blessed as we are, we have real struggles. But we need to learn to trust in God as much as Israel needed to learn to trust in God. Are we looking for what God has done for us? Look how blessed we are. Do we acknowledge that God has blessed us? That what God has done for us? The reason I say that is, as I look at these spies, as I look at Israel, I think, you didn't have to just accept on faith that God was going to deliver you. You had already seen the power of God. And so it's important that we look for God's power and recognize it, right? And that we share it. We share it with our families. We share it with others, what God has done. Not only in the Bible, but realize that God is still active and alive. That God still works in the lives of men and in nations. That nations don't rise and fall without God's involvement in that. That our prayer is answered. That God listens. Our prayer for healing. Our prayer for work. Our prayer for family. Our prayer for culture. All of those things. Our prayer about church and about those who are lost, which should be important to us. That God answers those prayers. And so when we look at the obstacles that come our way, we shouldn't look at these are insurmountable because of my inability. Because I'm going to be honest with you, if you're depending on your ability, most of them are insurmountable. I mean to be ugly to you, it's just a fact. But the Scripture never says, never indicates, never leads us to trust in our ability to overcome. It's not about God empowering us with enough ability to overcome. It is all about us what? trusting in the power of God to deliver us. That's totally different. It's totally different. It's about trusting God to deliver, for God to make things right. Because here's what Paul will say to the Romans. All things work together for good to those who love the Lord and are called according to His purposes, right? God's going to make the way. It doesn't say all things are good. It just says all things work together for good. You know, and I use this analogy a lot because I have a great respect for Joseph. Joseph is so influential in Hebrew history, in the history of the coming of the Messiah. But for Joseph, it's about imprisonment, being sold as a slave, right? So Joseph's got to be sitting there thinking, God, where are you? Come on, I ain't done a thing. Yeah, my brother's got bad about the dreams, but you gave me the dreams. But we look back and we say, Joseph, what happened to you made all the difference. And so it's about trusting God and accepting God's will in our lives. And knowing that God will help us to overcome, and nothing exterior. I want to repeat that. Y'all hear that if you don't hear anything else. Nothing exterior. Nothing exterior can overcome the power of God. God is sovereign. God is sovereign. That means that God's will is always done. Now, let's be careful with that, because not everything that happened does God want to happen. Remember, we live in a fallen world and all the consequences of that. We're in a world under a curse. But what I'm saying is God doesn't get caught off guard. God doesn't get overpowered. God doesn't get caught unaware. God doesn't get oop, that's too big for me. Never. Never. And so it's about learning to trust God and walk with Him in the struggles, allowing God to deliver us or at least walk with us through them. The psalmist, the man who God says, this is a man after my own heart, David, who had his struggles, right? David's an adulterous murderer. Let's just be honest who he is, his struggles. But in the 23rd Psalm, which is one of our favorites, David doesn't say, I'll never have to walk in dark places. I'll never have an enemy. I'll never have struggle. I'll never have dark times or dark places. Here's what he says. In the presence of my enemies, what's God going to do? Provide for me, right? I'm going to have enemies, but God's going to provide for me. I'm going to have to walk through the valley of the shadow of death, a place where there's struggle and fear and anxiety. But what am I going to do? I'm not going to be in fear because why? Because I'm the biggest bear in the woods. It's not what David says. I'm the king. It's not what David says. David says, I'm not going to fear the valley of the shadow of death because God, you're with me. That's why David didn't fear, because God was with him. The land of Canaan was intimidating. The people were intimidating. And the people who had seen the power of God just chose not to trust Him because they looked at themselves and says, we're powerless to do anything. But God would have delivered them into the land of Canaan then. They only waited 40 years because of their lack of faith, not because that's what God needed to be prepared. And so as we face life and those obstacles that are huge, and sometimes those that just appear huge, realize that none of it, is beyond the power and control of God, who created everything and who is in charge and who still cares for each one of us. Cares so much that He sent His Son to die for us so we might be forgiven of our sins. Because is there a greater obstacle than death? Have you ever been somewhere and say, oh, this is awful, but at least it won't kill me? I mean, have you ever, it's kind of been like, this is terrible. Maybe it's going to be painful. It's going to be unpleasant. But say, at least it won't kill me. I'm going to get out of this alive. Which there's some comfort in that, right? Because that thought of death is still, even though Jesus has delivered us, is still overpowering. But what did Jesus do at the resurrection? Overcame the power of sin and death, didn't He? But not only has God made a way for us eternally, God cares for us each and every day in the struggles of our lives. As we have to cross the Jordan and face the struggle, God is with us. And just like He delivered Israel, God will deliver us. So don't let the trees and the mountains and the rivers and the darkness and the fog paralyze you. Learn to trust in God as you walk through those and be about His business and know that God, like He always has, will bless His people. Jesus died on a cross so that we might have life eternal, that we might be children of God, that we might be heirs of God, and that we might be, as those children of God, blessed by the King. If you need to come, do that while we stand and sing.